This is KYUK, public radio for the Yukon Kuskokwim Delta. I'm Evan Erickson. Sled dog teams in the 2026 Iditarod are racing across the sea ice of Norton Sound as defending champ Jesse Holmes holds a solid lead in the hopes of joining a handful of mushers with consecutive wins. Only five others have repeated as champs in the Iditarod Trail sled dog race, and the last was a decade ago. In Koyuk on Monday morning, Holmes told the Iditarod Insider that mushing over the Blueberry Hills into the previous checkpoint of Shaktuluk had been a highlight of his race.
It was the best ride of my life. Most amazing dog team I ever seen. And they're all barking, howling to go every time I stop. Dogs that typically don't even bark in at home, you know. We're just losing their minds.
Holmes and Team Can't Stop have led much of the 1,000-mile race. Other top teams, including Cantwell musher Paige Drobny and veteran Travis Beals, have been leapfrogging each other and will continue as mushers alternate run and recovery. Holmes fed his dogs beef, fat, and kibble in Koyuk on Monday morning and told Iditarod Insider that good nutrition keeps the dogs in the right mood.
And it makes it to where if you need to do a long run, it's no problem. It keeps the dogs' attitudes up. It doesn't give them any chance to go calorie deficient. I mean, I wish I knew all this stuff, you know, before. You know, a couple more years, I'll learn a couple more tricks too, hopefully.
From Koyuk, it's another 90 miles or so to White Mountain, where teams take a mandatory 8-hour rest. With enough of a gap on the rest of the pack, the leader out of White Mountain often wins the race. It's 77 miles from White Mountain to Nome, where a first-place team could finish as early as this afternoon. As of Monday evening, Bethel musher Pete Kaiser was in 11th place and had pulled out of the Shaktuluk checkpoint, setting off across the fully exposed Norton Sound sea ice to the next checkpoint of Koyuk. The state of Alaska recently filed civil lawsuits against six crowdfunding websites, accusing them of illegally soliciting donations for thousands of Alaska charities without consent, according to reporting from the Alaska Beacon. In complaints filed in Anchorage Superior Court, the Consumer Protection Unit of the Alaska Department of Law said GoFundMe, PayPal, Charity Navigator, Pledgling Technologies, Just Giving, and Network for Good each violated the Alaska Charitable Solicitations Act thousands of times. That act, in place since 1993, requires state registration for anyone who seeks donations on behalf of a charity. The suits ask a judge to order the sites shut down the pages devoted to Alaska nonprofits and immediately disperse any donations to those nonprofits. It also asks for separate civil penalties of not less than $1,000 and not more than $25,000 per violation. According to the complaints, the six crowdfunding sites scraped IRS data to obtain the information of thousands of Alaska nonprofits, then set up donation pages for each of those nonprofits without their consent. That scraping was part of a nationwide campaign that encompassed almost 1.5 million federally registered organizations. In some cases, the sites charged fees or encouraged tips to themselves during the donation process. In many cases, they poured donations into a third-party account and only released donations to charities who stepped forward to claim them, according to the complaints. Attorney General Stephen Cox said the state became aware of the issue after California reporters and state officials began investigating why GoFundMe created donation pages for 1.4 million nonprofits without their consent or knowledge. Lori Wolf is president and CEO of the 4-Acre Group, which advises Alaska nonprofits and provides them with administrative support. The 4-Acre Group has been issuing warnings about the issue for months, and Wolf filed an affidavit in support of the lawsuit, as did a representative of the Bethel Community Services Foundation and Breadline Incorporated, which operates a food bank in Fairbanks. Wolf said the issue became particularly important last fall when people across the United States and the world became aware of the devastation caused by ex-Typhoon Halong in western Alaska. Many people, not knowing local Alaska charities, simply donated via links they found on internet searches. Some of those donations may have never reached their intended recipients. If a crowdfunding website operates independently of the charity it intends to benefit, it might interfere with the charity's own fundraising, Wolf explained. Someone might never be recognized for their gift and become angry, hurting the charity's long-term relationship with their community. This week's lawsuits in state court rely in large part on the 1993 Alaska Charitable Solicitations Act. That bill passed the Alaska legislature amid a surge of concern about telemarketers soliciting donations by phone. A bill meant to protect Alaskans from drinking water contaminated with PFAS had its first committee hearing last week. PFAS, often called forever chemicals since they don't break down naturally, are toxic and known to cause severe health problems, including cancer. KTOO's Alex Solon reports.
Senate Bill 219 would limit the amount of PFAS allowed in Alaska's drinking water to levels announced by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency in 2024, which follows the science on health effects. It would also require the state to test public drinking water sources annually and to provide residents with clean water if they test above those legal limits. This comes 2 years after the Alaska legislature passed a law ending the use of PFAS in firefighting foams, which is the leading source of PFAS in the environment, especially at airports and military bases. PFAS are also found in a variety of products like nonstick cookware, waterproof fabrics, and food packaging. Jenna Calhoun is a staffer for Senator Scott Kawasaki, who introduced the bill. She said at the Senate State Affairs Committee hearing that the bill would expand the responsibilities of the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation.
Well, what it does is it establishes an annual expectation for the DEC to test all public water systems in the state for PFAS. That way, they are continually monitoring our drinking water to ensure that it's safe for Alaskan citizens.
Health issues linked to PFAS include several types of cancer, reproductive problems, and immune system issues. DEC has logged PFAS at hundreds of sites around the state, including in Gustavus, Anchorage, and Fairbanks. Calhoun said the cost to provide clean drinking water would be borne by the party responsible for spilling PFAS or the chemical manufacturer. Janet Nielsen has lived in Gustavus for about 30 years. In 2018, the Alaska Department of Transportation alerted residents that PFAS was found in groundwater around the Gustavus Airport, which is located upstream from neighborhoods. Researchers tested her kid's blood as part of a study published in 2022 that traced PFAS contamination at the airport through the drinking water and into residents' bodies. Nielsen testified at the hearing that her two kids were exposed to PFAS at school.
Without SB 219, Alaska is effectively telling its citizens that levels up to 70 parts per trillion in their water are safe, and they are not. We know that. And I know now that my family was not so lucky. Even though we didn't live inside the plume, my kids were drinking contaminated, poisoned water at their preschool and at their school at 40 parts per trillion.
Right now, Alaska does not have enforceable drinking water standards for PFAS, but recommends action at 70 parts per trillion. Many wells in Gustavus tested at or above that in 2024, the last time testing was done. DOT provides clean drinking water to some properties there. Those levels, 40 to 70 parts per trillion, are far higher than EPA standards announced a couple of years ago, which capped levels for some PFAS chemicals at between 4 and 10 parts per trillion, after a slew of studies found serious health impacts even at low concentrations. For reference, 1 part per trillion is like a single drop of water in 20 Olympic-sized swimming pools. But under the Trump administration, the EPA announced its intent to rescind or delay those new standards. Nielsen said that means the state should take the lead on protecting Alaskans. Several states have enacted laws on PFAS in drinking water. DOT and DEC estimate that enforcement would cost nearly $19 million in the first year, according to the bill's fiscal notes. Pamela Miller is the executive director and senior scientist at Alaska Community Action on Toxics, a nonprofit that advocates for PFAS regulations. She testified at the hearing.
People do continue to be exposed to dangerous levels of PFAS, and this failure to act puts people at long-term risk.
Miller said she supports the bill, except for the section on using thermal remediation, since some studies have shown the technique doesn't always work. She also said the nonprofit has distributed more than 100 PFAS water test kits to communities across the state. A companion bill, House Bill 235, has been introduced by Representative Carolyn Hall. The bills are written to address public drinking water sources. Nielsen, the parent who raised her kids in Gustavus, says she hopes that will include private wells. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
This is KYUK News. I'm Evan Erickson. Koyana for listening. please share your news tips, comments, or suggestions. You can email us at news@kyuk.org or message us on Facebook. And stay tuned for Yoktun Ganumjit coming up.